This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Since 1978, Dr. Claire Parkinson has been a climatologist at the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. She is currently their senior scientist for climate change. She's also project scientist for AQUA, the multi-tooled satellite launched in May 2002. We are calling Claire now about the sudden collapse of sea ice, not in the Arctic, but around Antarctica. Claire Parkinson, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. I'm glad to be here.
When Arctic sea ice crashed around 2007, I remember it, my jaw dropped. A lot of scientists were surprised. But meanwhile, at the other pole, ice was spreading further away from Antarctica. It was getting bigger. And that was different from what models predicted under global warming. Do we know why Antarctic sea ice was expanding then?
We definitely do not have a consensus viewpoint on that. There have been quite a few attempts at explanations, but the increases continued until 2014, which is when it reached the peak for the Antarctic. And after that, it's been more on the downward trend. But we do not have agreed upon consensus explanations for why it was increasing. It's definitely a puzzle for scientists at this point.
Right. That was my guess, too, when I started looking at earlier papers from 2016 and earlier explaining that expansion. And they were talking about all sorts of things, from teleconnections to great big cycles to atmospheric changes, ocean current changes. And when you've got that many answers, it means you probably don't have the answer.
That's exactly right. And as you said, oscillations have been part of the attempted explanations, and atmospheric phenomena, ocean phenomena, also the land ice. As the land ice melts into the oceans, it's putting in very, very cold water. And so that's been an attempted explanation also of why the sea ice was in expanding.
So when did Antarctic sea ice stop expanding and enter into a kind of crash, and how fast did it contract?
Okay, it was 2014 when it reached its peak. And then from 2014 to 2017 in particular, those 3 years showed a huge decrease. The decrease was far faster than any of the decrease that we've seen in the Arctic. And it was basically, in terms of how fast it was, it decreased a total of a little bit over 2 million square kilometers in just those 3 years. That comes out to an area that exceeds the area of Mexico. So more than the area of Mexico is how much aerial expanse of sea ice decrease there was from 2014 to 2017 in terms of a yearly average basis.
And it's strange because we've heard a lot of worry and panic about the disappearance of Arctic sea ice, but I don't know that most of the public realizes that Antarctica stopped enlarging and started crashing.
I don't think that most people realize that either. So I think you're correct on that. And the Arctic has, as you said, received a lot of attention since the late 1990s, essentially. And it's deserved a lot of it, but this huge decrease in the Antarctic is much, much faster than what the Arctic decreases have been.
The precipitous reversal of a trend in Antarctic sea ice sounds like some kind of system switch was triggered. What do we know about what caused the big change in the sea ice there?
There again, we do not have a consensus viewpoint on that. The evidence indicates that in the early and mid-1970s, there was also a very rapid decrease of Antarctic sea ice. And that's before the record that started in late 1978, the 40-year record that peaked in 2014. So for some reason, the Antarctic has experienced two periods of really rapid sea ice decreases, one in the 1970s and one from 2014 and the next few years after that. And the Arctic has not, in the time frame of our satellite records, has not experienced anything anywhere close to that kind of decrease. And so it could be related to the very different geographies in the two cases. If you think about the Arctic, you realize that the Arctic sea ice cover is largely confined by the land area around the Arctic. So the Arctic sea ice cover is largely in the Arctic Ocean and surrounded by Europe and Asia and North America and Greenland. Whereas the Antarctic, if you think about the geography of the Antarctic, the central polar region is the Antarctic continent, not sea ice, but instead the continent. And the sea ice is around the continent, and it is not prevented from going further equatorward because instead it's bounded by Pacific Ocean, Indian Ocean, Atlantic Ocean. So it's oceans that are to its equatorward side. And so therefore it can expand out a lot more readily than the Arctic ice can.
Now, did I get this right? It seemed to me during my research that the Arctic ice is melting mainly because of sun heating the top of it, whereas Antarctic sea ice was melting more because of warm water melting it up from the bottom. Is that right?
Even that is not certain. The Arctic ice is very much connected with the warming in the Arctic. The Arctic has a strong record of warming over this period of the last few decades. It's definitely warming quite a bit faster than the globe as a whole. And that's both increasing the melt of the ice, but it's also being fed by the melt of the ice. And the way that that happens is the ice is white, it's highly reflective, so most of the sun's radiation that comes down and reaches the sea ice cover gets reflected off and goes back to space. If the sea ice cover retreats, which it's been doing in the Arctic, then there's solar radiation in some areas of the Arctic will come down, and instead of hitting the ice and getting reflected back to space, instead hits the liquid ocean and goes into the ocean, warms the ocean up, and stays within the Earth atmosphere system so that it contributes to the further warming. This is what scientists call a positive feedback. I prefer to call it an enhancing feedback just because the word positive in a lot of people's minds means good, and that's not the meaning in this particular case. So that feedback was anticipated. Everybody knows that, well, climate scientists know that a reduction in sea ice is going to have this effect of less solar radiation being reflected back to space and therefore contributes to a further warming. So in the Arctic, things seemed so understandable in terms of the way things were going were right in line with what the expectations were with warming and lessened sea ice, therefore more warming and more or lessened sea ice. And the whole pattern in the Arctic fit. So there's less land ice, less sea ice. There's warming temperatures in the atmosphere, warming temperatures in the ocean, permafrost melting. So a whole pattern of changes all fit. And the Antarctic, it just was not fitting like we had expected. So the Antarctic was definitely the more puzzling case.
But if an area the size of Mexico changes from dark sun-absorbing to light reflective, or the other way around in this case, where the Antarctic lost sea ice, would that also not tend to add heat to the oceans around Antarctica?
Definitely. It definitely would.
Now, another thing that people have been guessing at in all this is that in recent years we've seen erratic weather in the northern hemisphere, partly due to north-south waves forming in the jet stream, which should be from west to east. Has the jet stream changed around the South Pole, and is that a factor in the retraction of sea ice cover?
Definitely. The thought is that atmospheric changes could very likely be factors. You would have to ask an atmospheric scientist to get the details correct on that, but atmospheric changes are definitely thought to be a factor.
And what is the state of Antarctic sea ice now in 2019, and are there projections for this year?
Well, right now, the sea ice is low compared to what it was this time of year back in 2014 when it was up at its highest levels. But it's a little bit higher than it was in 2017 and 2018. So there's been a slight rebound from the previous 2 years, but still the trend from 2014 high point, the trend is still downward. It's still well below what it had been in the years prior to 2015.
In July, you published the paper titled "A 40-Year Record Reveals Gradual Antarctic Sea Ice Increases, Followed by Decreases at Rates Far Exceeding the Rates Seen in the Arctic." That was in PNAS. And in the discussion section, we find, quote, "This illustrates that the ice decreases since 2014 are no assurance that the 1979-2014 overall positive trend in Southern Ocean ice extents has reversed to a long-term negative trend." Could you clarify that about what we know and what we don't?
Fortunately, since the 1970s, we've had satellite data that really give us a good picture of the extent and distribution of the sea ice in each hemisphere. So we've got a good record of that. What we don't know is the future. So we know that the ice aerial extent was increasing overall. Now, there's a lot of interannual variability in both hemispheres. But we know the Antarctic sea ice overall was increasing from the late 1970s until 2014. We know that it decreased dramatically over the next 3 years. In fact, so dramatically that in that 40-year record that you just mentioned, from 1979 to 2018, so in that 40-year record, the very highest yearly average was in 2014. The very lowest was in 2017. So in just those 3 years, it went from the highest to the lowest. So huge change there. So we know from the satellite data that that's basically what happened. Now, the satellite data aren't absolutely perfect. We can't say that we know to the nearest 100 kilometers what's right, but we're talking about millions of kilometers of ice here. And so we do know from the satellite data the basics. What we don't know is what the future will bring. So in the 1970s, when there is this indication of a very rapid decrease before the 40-year record started, that decrease reversed. And so, therefore, there is the possibility with some evidence from the past that the decrease we've seen from 2014 on, that decrease could reverse too. So we do know that that's a possibility. On the other hand, we also know that overall the Earth's atmosphere is warming, and the projections from the best computer models that we have are pretty uniform in terms of indicating that the warming will overall be continuing. It's not like each year is warmer than the year before, but the long trend is toward warming. So therefore, that would be a scenario in which one would expect that there's a strong possibility that the Antarctic sea ice might continue to decrease instead of rebounding like it did from the 1970s. So that's why in the paper I indicated that we don't know. It could go either way.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. Our guest, Claire Parkinson, is author of more than 100 scientific publications and author or editor of at least a dozen books, including An Atlas of Arctic Sea Ice. And we are talking about a remarkable loss of sea ice around Antarctica. So if there's less sea ice around the southern pole, at least for a while, does that affect things like coastal erosion on Antarctica or the speed of glaciers discharging ice to the sea?
It certainly affects coastal erosion, and that's certainly been an effect in the Arctic too. And that's basically because if you've got sea ice that's right along the coast, then the waves from the ocean can't so easily strike the coast and cause more coastal erosion. And so when the ice retreats and you end up with land areas that the ocean can strike right into, you can get more coastal erosion. Now, along a large part, the majority, in fact, of Antarctica, it's not dry land that's right up against the ocean. It's instead the Antarctic ice sheet. And so that affects things a bit. But certainly the loss of sea ice right along the coast does have an effect of increasing coastal erosion.
Well, as you know, Claire, a few scientists are so alarmed about the warming impacts of losing Arctic sea ice, they propose launching sulfates or some other material to block out some of the sun. And the goal of that geoengineering would be to preserve the remaining sea ice. Claire, do you think that could or should be done?
I'm concerned by that. My feeling is that humans have poured a lot of materials into the atmosphere and into the oceans, and certainly the indication is that these have done some harm. Now, really, our models are not good enough to be sure of the consequences of different things, and so I would much prefer for us not to try to solve a problem that we created by pouring something even more into the atmosphere. So I would much prefer personally to try to solve it by either taking the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and some people are thinking of schemes of doing that, and that would also come under the term of geoengineering, or trying to use other sources of energy so that we're not pouring as much into the atmosphere as we've been doing, or to try to change lifestyles so that we don't need as much. So, you know, reusing things, giving things away instead of throwing them away, and just using less if possible.
I think those are the answers I would choose as well, but maybe we shouldn't even be worried about swings in the sea ice around Antarctica. Perhaps it doesn't really matter that much. What do you think?
I can understand why the concern would be greater in the Arctic, because you do have communities living in the Arctic that are being affected by changes in sea ice, and you do have the polar bears, which are so iconic, and it's clear that the loss of sea ice does hurt the polar bears in terms of their lifestyle. And so I understand why the Arctic might generate more concerns, and also because changes in the Arctic do have more impacts on the weather in the Northern Hemisphere and including in the U.S. But the Antarctic is important also, and the loss of ice in the Antarctic is going to increase the amount of solar radiation absorbed within the Earth's atmosphere system, in particular in the Antarctic oceans, and that's going to contribute in the long term also. Another concern would be the land ice situation. So in the Antarctic, you've got way more land ice. And in terms of the extremely important concern about sea level rise, it's the land ice that matters, not the sea ice. Sea ice is already in the oceans, so if it goes away, it's not affecting sea level. But the land ice, if that melts or calves off into icebergs, that's adding water or ice to the oceans, and it's causing sea level rise. And in that case, the Antarctic is where the huge bulk of land ice is. So in the Arctic, you've got Greenland, which is the second largest bulk of ice, but the Antarctic is the one that's got the huge majority of land ice on this planet.
There's a rash of fires in Australia already in their early springtime, and meanwhile in New Zealand it's been pretty cold and wet, and Patagonia too, and scientists are pointing towards a sudden stratospheric warming event that just appeared over Antarctica in the first couple of weeks of September. There was an 80-degree C rise in temperature in the upper atmosphere, which is astounding. Do you know anything about that, or is that something for an atmospheric scientist to speak to?
That is definitely something for an atmospheric scientist. I do know a little about it, and I do know that the expectation is maybe it will affect the ozone hole this year. And in fact, maybe having the ozone conditions improve this year, and the ozone in the stratosphere and in the upper atmosphere.
So when the satellites look at it, has the ozone hole stabilized, or has it actually decreased as we hoped it would, or do we have to wait till 2070 to see the final end of this thing?
Oh, the ozone hole comes out really clear on some of the satellite results. The satellite results that show plots of the size of the ozone hole have shown that that size was increasing dramatically in the 1980s. Then the Montreal Protocol to reduce the emissions of chlorofluorocarbons, that Montreal Protocol, which was signed in 1987, that had a very good effect. And you can see it in these plots where the rapid increase in the size of the ozone hole in the 1980s has kind of leveled off. Now, leveling off means it's still up there high, much higher than it was in 1980. And so you could still sometimes expect that you might get another record high in terms of the size, but it's leveled off in terms of it is no longer just on this rapid rise. And the same thing in terms of the depth of the ozone hole. And what that means is how low do the values get in terms of the amount of ozone. And those plots show that the amount of ozone, the depth was going way down very fast in the 1980s, and then has been slowly going up a bit since then. So you can definitely see from the plots from the satellite data that there's been an improvement over what it would have been, but it's nowhere as close to getting back to the levels of ozone in the upper atmosphere that were there in 1980.
You started at NASA the very year they launched the Nimbus 7 satellite, and that was the first that could record sea ice cover around Antarctica, and before that we were kind of blind. Now please tell us, what does the AQUA satellite do?
Okay, to quickly answer on the AQUA satellite wasn't launched until 2002, and that measures all sorts of things. It measures lots of phenomena in the atmosphere, including clouds and carbon dioxide and methane and aerosols. It measures different things in the ocean, including chlorophyll, including ocean temperatures. It measures sea ice. It measures land ice. It measures vegetation on the land. So the AQUA satellite is a very multi-purpose satellite, and it was launched in 2002. Your comment about the satellite that was launched in 1978, that was actually Nimbus 7, and there had been a previous satellite called Nimbus 5. And Nimbus 5, which was launched in December of 1972, Nimbus 5 did have an instrument on it that could measure the sea ice and did measure the sea ice and got a four-year record. That instrument measured microwave radiation, and there's this huge, huge advantage of using microwave radiation to get sea ice coverage in the Arctic and the Antarctic for climate purposes. And the huge advantages include that the microwave is coming from within the Earth system itself. So it's not reflected sunlight. So if you think about it, if you've got an instrument up on a satellite that measures visible radiation, the type that our eyes see, that satellite is going to have all the advantages, but also all the disadvantages of our eyes. So if it's a nice clear day and sunny out, you're going to, with a visible instrument on board the satellite, you're going to see the sea ice just like our eyes would be able to see it. So this is great. You get pictures that our eyes can readily understand. But the microwaves, they are coming from within the Earth atmosphere system. So therefore, you can get your pictures from the microwaves, whether it's day or night. You do not need sunlight. And you can get it even if it's cloudy out, because the microwave radiation in general can go straight through most clouds. So we can, with the microwave instruments, see through the clouds and get our data, whether it's daytime or night, whether it's cloudy or not cloudy. So in 1972, this Nimbus 5 satellite carried on board an instrument that was essentially a proof of concept instrument. And it was able to measure the microwave radiation coming up. We spent a lot of time analyzing the data from that instrument, which got a record for 4 years before it ceased giving good data. The Nimbus 7, that was the one that was launched in October of 1978, that had a much improved instrument on board measuring the microwave radiation. And it's that record from October 1978 that we have a really solid record of the sea ice cover. So we did have some satellite data before that, but it wasn't as good quality.
Last question, Claire Parkinson. I know you have been an inspiration for many women scientists. Who inspired you?
Oh, that's a tougher question than you might have meant it to be. Wow. Well, I actually am inspired by a lot of people. In general, people who have overcome difficulties of one type or another. Yeah, I'm inspired more by people who've like overcome various disorders rather than by scientists in particular.
I love that. I hear exactly what you're saying. We've been speaking with Claire Parkinson, a trailblazing scientist gathering satellite data about Earth and our climate. She is senior scientist at the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center and project scientist for Aqua Satellite. Find links to her recent paper in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Claire, thank you for sharing your valuable time with us.
Alex, thank you very much.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.